Hello and welcome to the Adhaparada podcast. This is Aditya. If you're even slightly online among the Indian cinephile crowd, you probably heard about the great start to 2024 that Malayalam cinema is having. The conversation began only in the last couple of weeks with the release of Rahul Sadasivan's Brahmayugam, Girish, Premalu, and last week with Chidambaram's Manjumal Boys, which I am planning to watch later today. But a month ago, we had Lee Jo Jo's Pericheri's Malakottai Valiban, his first collaboration with Mohanlal, that, to put it mildly, didn't go down too well with Lal fans, especially the younger lot who prefer him to do Drishyams and Nehru's with Jeetu Joseph or a film like Lucifer. But such is the memory of, you know, the perennially online cinephile that Malakottai Valiban is now magically included in the conversation about great start Malayalam cinema is having this year. That's the film we'll be talking about in this episode. We'll return to Premalu with a separate episode on Girish's filmography that is shaping up nicely. I'm a big fan of both Tandir Mathan Dinangal and Super Sharanya. Malakottai Valiban is a film that's an amalgamation of many things and at the same time one of a kind, no surprise to its polarizing reception. It stars Mohanlal, Sonali Kulkarni, Manoj Moses, Harish Pereddy, Kathanandi, and Danish Seth. To talk about it, we have two guests. We have writer and film critic with Mint Lounge, Uday Bhatia, who returns to the podcast after Talumala. Hi, Uday.
Hey. Hello. Nice to be back.
And we have in the first two Adityas in an episode, we have freelance writer Aditya Manija. Hi, Aditya. Welcome to the podcast.
Hi, Aditya. I don't think I've said that too often.
Thanks for joining, both of you. We'll just jump straight into it. Let's start with the initial thoughts. All of us watched it on the big screen. So, Aditya, do you want to go first? Like, what was your immediate thoughts with the film?
Sure. So, I had very little knowledge about the film before I stepped into the hall. And although I had watched Lee Jo's films before, this is very different from anything of his that I had ever seen. My first impressions were simply that this was, someone called it a stoner movie, you know, after I watched it. And I tend to agree that it has a lot of visuals that would be considered quote-unquote trippy. It has beautiful cinematography throughout. It has such a diverse range of emotions and voices and scenarios. I just found it a bit of an all-sorts film that when it's good, it's very, very, very good. And when it's not so good, it's a little perplexing for people who are probably not as clued into genre.
Yeah. Uday?
Yeah, I was quite drawn in by the trailer of this because it didn't. We've gotten very used to these sort of big budget historical action movies in recent years from all the cinemas of India, but this didn't look to be fitting in that even from the trailer. It sort of had a bit of a vagueness in the trippiness that Aditya mentions was there in the trailer itself. And once you start the film, you realize it's downright eccentric. I mean, in a very good way. It's just, you kind of realize that this is not a film that is going to play by structures that you're at all familiar with. And instead, it takes this sort of storytelling mode that's sort of almost like an Arabian Nights kind of structure. And then it kind of just goes with it. Like each tale becomes more and more fantastical until you're literally dealing with the supernatural by the end of it. And it's quite a, from Lee Jo, who is one of the more experimental popular filmmakers in India, this is, I think, a great statement of purpose from him to take like a big star like Mohan Lal and then to put him in a film that is thoroughly entertaining but like completely idiosyncratic and like really really distinctive. And so it's quite a it takes quite a confident filmmaker, I think, to do that.
Yeah, Arabian Nights is the first thought that, that came to me as well when, especially the first half and all the images, the setting, and yeah, storytelling is such an important aspect to it. And there's something about Lijo that he keeps playing with genres, and it's you by now it's pretty evident that you cannot. We cannot really you have to expect the unexpected with him. And you brought up the trailer. Like trailer was didn't give anything away. It was cut so well, and it just built up that curiosity to it. But so anyone going in looking for narrative cinema, I think would have been disappointed, which probably happened with most of the folks. And there was already a lot of expectations built up because of Mammootty and Nanpagal Nerathumaikam that they did, and how it was received. I think he did design sort of a perfect film for Mohan Lal, but at the same time not the perfect film that people probably expect from Mohan Lal at this point in his career. But I think Lijo, the way he just like a chameleon, he just adapts to different genres and just throws everything at you. That's something. And as Aditya said, it's the stoner movie part. The first day the reactions was this is like Double Barrel, which is the most loathed Lijo film, which is more for Robert Rodriguez and a mix of Grindhouse and all those kind of films. And I think everyone saw the pre-interval part, the which is. I think it's the Portuguese, right? The slave liberation thing. That is the closest that the film gets to Double Barrel. But apart from that, everything is completely different. But we can understand that. Yeah, it's something that's not going to sit well with most of the people. If they were looking for Mohan Lal's big hit, I don't think this was the one.
Not only, I think, not a big hit, but I think, I mean, this film obviously wants a second part. It's set up to have a sequel, and I don't know if that sequel will ever come, actually.
I would bet again. I don't think so. Yeah.
Which is one of the, you know, the problem, again, this is just like with modern filmmaking, this sort of obsession with planning things in twos and threes and like as franchises, where I think in this case it may have been very ambitious to think that, you know, it would be received with open arms and to like end it very much as like an end of part one instead of like closing up a story. I think that might be one of the things that I think goes against this film in my book. But we'll come to that, I think, maybe a little later. I just want to ask both of you. I haven't really I haven't kept up with Mohan Lal in recent years, and especially not with his more actiony kind of films. And is this kind of like is this like sort of in the way that he is presented in those, like this sort of mythical figure, or is it more down to earth in his other like more commercial action oriented stuff?
I would say, like, I mean, in recent times, the biggest hit in terms of his the mass film, so to speak, and actioners, I think Lucifer is the one that did very well, and everybody tend to like it. It's actually a very it's not it's, it's an ordinary film, but just well made. Prithviraj directed it, so it did well, and it probably had fans wanting more of the same. But Mohanlal and Mammootty are they're very Like completely different kind of stars, if you compare the other languages. Like, I mean, it's very Malayalam. It's nothing new to the industry itself, but they've been acting in 5 to 6 films per year, like for the last so many years. And though Mammootty has had like great success on and off in that period, the only success that Mohanlal has had is with Jeetu Doshab. The two Drishyams are well known, and then there is again Jeetu Doshab made Nehru, like which released in December, which again was a huge hit. But Mohanlal's films and choices have been derided like by almost everyone, and but his fan following was there, and some films do well. A film like Lucifer, obviously, when it's well made, it does well. But I don't think this is what people expected, and though they would larger than life a mythical hero, but the genre specifics, the way it is made, the way it is presented, and then the way the narrative moves, like, you know, it just goes from one place to another so quickly in this film that I don't think anybody was ready for this kind of monologue.
I think so Uday and I watched the film together, might have mentioned that, but when I was watching the film, this was one of the first aspects of the narrative that I actually commented on. What you just said, Aditya, that, you know, the narrative just keeps on shifting from one thing to another. And I remember pointing out to Uday that this is a widely acknowledged and very well documented aspect of pre-modern or medieval literature. That Amitav Ghosh, in the book The Great Derangement, he mentions this, that one of the key aspects of medieval literature is that it, quote unquote, leaps from exceptional event to exceptional event. Like, that is a very structure. If you read Arabian Nights, if you read Boccaccio, you read Homer, etc., this is how the story is told. So in a way, I was very happy that it happened in that episodic manner. Okay, now he defeats this wrestler. Now he goes, defeats that king. Now he meets English people who are speaking Portuguese. So all of these exceptional events are meant as exactly that. And there are no like filler material as the modern day novel or modern day film might have.
Yeah, and it is like a frame narrative, but you can't really spot what is the frame narrative here and which is the main one, which is the everything that originates from it. That is really not something that you can point a finger at. I want to talk about what did you make of, like, moving a little bit away from Mohanlal for a bit, Manoj Mose's character, Chinnapayan, and Jamandipu's love story. That I thought some of the shot making in the first 45 minutes with their story was just absolutely breathtaking.
Beautiful. And that song with the two of them, which is, I think, the only instrumentation is just a harmonium playing. I think this is after Mohanlal has won his second big fight, the huge wuxia thing, which happens, and then they have like a very tender little song, and just beautifully shot those ones. And I think that their track is perhaps like the only, I think for me, the only really sort of emotionally resonant thing in the whole in the film. I didn't really find that so much with the Malaikottai Vallabhan character himself, and like the revelations about his own family and all. But their love story was really nice. I really did like that.
Yeah, and that is, I think, it's probably like intentional, like in the sense that is one thread that actually, you know, you the film actually revisits at some point. And only when I watched it, like I was just running through the film this morning, and I thought that there's actually no shallow focus at all. Like everything is deep focus. Like everything is white screen. Mm-hmm. Everything is like, you can just see everything clearly. Like there's a background. There's foreground. Everything is absolutely clear. That's a language that is maintained from start to end.
Yeah, I mean, Lijo's the master at that. You saw that in Nanpakal also. It's just, it's insane because these are like really, really detailed sort of scenes, and there's like so much action happening, and to keep everything in focus is quite crazy.
Even in the scenes that did not involve combat or hand-to-hand fighting, just the focus and the way he has, made symmetric shots is incredible. There is this moment where Mohan Lal, after he wins the first big battle, some grateful people invite him to their palace for a feast, and there is this ginormous plate in front of him, just piled up with rice. And what Mohan Lal does is that he picks up a few papads and he slaps them down on the mountain of rice. Okay, and that moment is just so beautifully captured, the excess of it and the emotions that it evokes in everybody. Very brief, again, very, very brief, not more than 3 to 4 seconds, but just beautiful and beautifully executed.
I want to just ask you also a bit about the action, because it's so many influences seem to be running through it, and I mean, this is just the film is kind of like you feel like you're getting a tour of his like his DVD library, because one moment it's like Khodorowsky, then it's Kurosawa, then it's Peckinpah, then it's like Leone, then it's suddenly like a touch of Zen, like the second battle with the Mangadu, is that the kingdom,
Mangalore is
Mangadu?
Danish Syed's kingdom.
Yeah, Mangadu warrior, the champion whom he has to fight. That is pure wuxia, like that's like a King Wu film, like a touch of Zen or Come Drink With Me or some one of those like
Yeah, that
amazing
fight scene
classic
is
wuxia
definitely.
films, and
Yeah,
it's
it's
crazy.
definitely Jet Li coded.
Yeah, it's the Mango 12.
Yeah, it's Jet Li coded, and it's almost like every fight has one clear stylistic precursor which it is following, and it follows that style for the duration of that fight, and then we move to the next fight, and then there's a completely different style. Like the British showdown is completely Chole and Sergio Leone, and the very first one is more like your Indian wrestling akhada sort of visuals there. And the second, as we established, was a wuxia shot. So in this way, he's sort of moving stylistically from, from one style to another, as one fight is going to fit one style, as if he has decided.
Yeah,
But
and even the first one
even
is
within
almost.
that, he is mixing it up, because when he fights the two Portuguese royals, those two crazy people, that's like a more modern martial arts kind of fight.
That is
And
actually, so there is Mortal Kombat there a little bit. When the two conjoin themselves
when they
armed to kick, they become Goro essentially.
And then of course, there is that Robert Rodriguez touch to the end of the fort fight, when she brings out that ridiculous large cannon and starts firing, and they're like going slow-mo through the market. It's like that's very Robert Rodriguez there. And so it's crazy. And then by the end, it becomes like a full-on samurai film framing, with the sunset in the background and just like two people facing off. And
Not to
it's
mention they got Warren Grover to create a Mehbooba Mehbooba clone for them.
yeah, that was weird. There's a lot of Sholay somehow in the middle of
Yeah,
that.
there's a lot of films like from Ranpagal, we know that I for some reason it was a big fan of old Tamil films, and there is a lot of MGR titles and film, even maybe sequences in this. I think even referred to as Ayyrathil Oruvan at one point, which is one among a thousand, and that's a MGR film title. And then there is the prison break sequence, which evokes something like the climax of Viramundi. And you have and that just one shot of the prisoners running outside, which is like there's a dissolve, there's this sort of ghostly shot to them. And that reminded me of something like, something like Return of the King, where Aragorn drinks all the kings. Also, that's exactly that. And I was like, that it's just like it doesn't repeat again. Like that's just one shot that is like that. It's not something that he revisits or is there in another shot. But They're just everything thrown in one sequence altogether.
Yeah, I don't, it's, you know, people who are like, you know, I think the reviews for this would be mostly like middling to sort of grudgingly good. I think no
Yeah.
one has slammed the film, but I think raves have not been really, there not been too many of those. It's mostly been like, you know, I liked it, but the imagery is good, it's shot well, but you know, it's a bit silly. And as I'm just like, you know, do you know how rare it is to get this kind of image making?
Yeah.
Like 10 minutes of image making from this film is enough to kind of match like an entire film's worth of images for like most other Indian filmmakers.
Yeah.
And if you
Yeah.
take all of it in totality, it is nuts. He's like, it's crazy. That's like a year's worth of memorable, distinctive, thought through image making in all packed into 1, 2.5 hour film. It's crazy. I mean, I'm saying it's great to have other problems and all with the film, which is fine, but you can't underrate this. Like, it's not just like, oh, it's well shot.
Yeah.
It is exceptional.
Yeah. I mean, whatever they're calling silly, it's so intentionally there. Like there is a design, and there is the universe is different, the world is different, and at no point that you could even place this anywhere. Like, of course, they speak Tamil, they speak Malayalam. They you can't really place it, and you can't place a narrative in any some sort of a composite genre that, oh, this is what we are going to get. And I think that is what has defeated so many people. Like even a lot of critics down south, they're like, I think some of them have dismissed the film too. Like, they've called it Lijo's weakest film and all that. So it's like so it so that's crazy to me, like you say, because there is so much work that's gone to this film, and there's so much to appreciate. Even I think that is something. It's a larger discussion anyway. Like, when people don't appreciate, the small things in a film, it's just always the big picture. But I thought, yeah, like you're absolutely right that there is so much to appreciate in this film in almost every scene.
Yeah, and I'm glad that Uday pointed out the bit about image making, because it really was literally 10 to 15 minutes into the movie that we're watching when there is this absolutely ethereal shot of Waliban looking up in the nighttime at a so it's a part of a palace, and it has three
Yeah.
segments. They're all alternately lit or not, and there's a woman on the third panel, there's a woman on the first panel, and the middle panel is just empty and dark. It's just beautifully framed. And yeah, it's the cinematography equivalent of having just a series, like 100 great hair days in succession. Okay, it's just doesn't happen. Okay. So the fact that it did happen here, and he strung together so many great shots in just the first half, and so much of the second half actually takes place in the darkness, that you're sort of lulled into believing that that process has stopped, but actually it hasn't. There are several great, awesome shots in the nighttime in the second half as well. One which I remember in particular was when Danish Syed and Waliban's teacher meet towards the end, and Waliban's
Yeah.
backstory is finally being sort of revealed.
Yeah, the real backstory is revealed. Yeah.
The real backstory is revealed, and just the super close, deep focus shots you have of Syed. There, you even have like a Kubrick, proper Kubrick super close up of Danish Syed at the height of his insanity. Like, whenever Kubrick characters
Yeah.
are at the peak of their, mental disintegration, you get a really close super Kubrick zoom shot, right? And that's what Lijo does with Danish Syed here, which I don't know if Danish is going to top this in his career.
And this is the one that you talk about, where like Danish face is superimposed on INR's face, like when he's telling the story that this guy is
Yeah,
laughing, and they're almost like, oh, they've suddenly become the same person. Yeah.
revenge makes
Yeah,
beasts
yeah.
out of men and so on.
Yeah,
It's
and yeah, go on.
just Maybe a little more on Danish Syed because, A, I mean, I hadn't looked up the thing really carefully, so I didn't even know Danish Syed is going to be there in it. And when he, I didn't recognize him until Aditya actually pointed, until he kind of shaved off his beard.
Yeah.
And then he actually like really looked like Danish Syed, and it was so I didn't even recognize him like early on, because you know who expects him to be there as the main villain or you know in this. And I don't know, it's quite a committedly weird performance. I did, I think he'd probably, if this was not planned as maybe a two-parter or whatever Lijo had in mind, he'd probably be like the guy who's disposed of early on, or who has his, or who's like a comic villain to match up like the main big bad. Obviously that wasn't how he planned. So you know, you get Syed through the whole film. I was just curious what you guys thought of the way he's used.
Just as Nasa in the comic villain cameo reminds me of the random Anurag Kashyap
Anurag appeared for the privilege of being mowed down by Talapathy.
Yeah, maybe something like
Wait,
that, what you'd expect,
are
but
we
yeah.
saying Sanjay Dutt is not a comic villain in Leo?
it. Yeah, so comic that you don't even know whether he's dead or not. Yeah, go on. Yeah, Aditya. Yeah.
So yeah, I actually love Danish's performance also because I don't, I think these days because of the way films are promoted and marketed, especially actors like to make a big deal about preparation and so on and accent training and lots of those things, and all those things are great. They are wonderful and they're necessary in some ways. They're inevitable byproducts of you know corporatization and so on. But I still believe there's a you know there's a part for performances like these, which are clearly unhinged, and they were not given. It's very clear that the actors were not given too much of a brief beyond just do whatever feels natural, be in the moment, and you know do what your head feels like in that moment. And it very much feels like Danish's performance comes from that school of naturalized acting rather than you know theater workshops and you know stuff like that. So I'm referring especially to that moment where in the middle of a slow-mo gunfight, he sort of stumbles up to a British red cap, stabs him, takes the cap, and then delivers a salute. All in
Yeah.
the middle of that, all in the middle of a very busy, visually busy also sort of gunfight sequence. And I thought that was, it's the kind of moment that in a bad film comes across as sheer lunacy. But in a good film, it comes across as one of those you know, serendipity type things which happens in the moment.
Yeah, it's part of the design. You can it doesn't stand out, yeah. In the sense that, yeah, it doesn't feel odd, like to say. And I was watching random interviews, and Danish was saying Lijo told him, like, because you mentioned the naturalized acting and do whatever you want, like Lijo apparently gave only one instruction. He asked him to see look at videos of hyenas and how hyenas laugh. That's all the instruction that he gave him, and it's like, yeah, you're probably right. So that's what came out. Yeah, I'm not sure. Like my friend who's from Kerala did talk about Danish dubbing for himself, and that being a slight problem with Malayalam, which definitely I don't think I can recognize. But yeah, but acting wise, I think it was very well in line with how the tone of the film.
I mean, I think that problem with the dubbing, I think that's a losing battle. I don't think people should
Yeah,
talk
yeah,
about that
yeah.
anymore because if you have watched more than one Sri Leela movies, and Sri Leela has, you know, delivered a variety of accents in a variety of languages, I don't think anybody is happy with the vocal performances in that. So, you know, it's I don't think Tamil or Telugu language films or Malayalam languages, I think people should just move on from this. It, not because it's not a worthy cause, but it's because it's a little bit futile to complain about
Yeah,
things
at this
like
point, yeah. Yeah, I think what we talk about The Asian cinema references. Do you want to elaborate on that?
That
I mean I think Aditya had mentioned Gopi Gayan Bhaga Bayan when we were watching it, and you
Buddha and the
wanna
Donkeys.
there's definitely that. Obviously, East Asian cinema, I think, very well represented in the wuxia and the samurai traditions, and maybe also like obviously a lot of Indian folk traditions of storytelling are there through the film. It is interesting to me to see how much the film could have become like a unreliable narrator story, like a trickster narrator almost telling larger and larger tales of their own heroism, but not actually being that kind of thing. The film didn't seem to want to go there, though it sets itself up for doing that perfectly, which was a bit surprising to me. Because he keeps saying everything you have known is bluff. Only believe what you see with your eyes. And then he starts telling these tales that are crazy, like none of them should be happening. And it seems like the film could pull the rug out of under the feet, but maybe that is maybe that's a move too far even for Lijo in with Indian audiences. So I don't know. But I kept thinking that that might be something that will happen later on.
I think it did set itself up perfectly for that kind of thing. You're right, because the very first scene. The his maven's son, who is obviously traveling with them, when he hears for the first time that that Waliban's first the first rival he knocks out in the film, he says, "Ki that rival, I forget, I think it was Malu, Kelu Master, yeah, something like that." So when the village wrestler is being spoken about in glowing terms, he said, "Oh, he's the champion of 18 wrestling rings." Okay, so his maven son quietly comments, "No doubt these all 18 rings were inside this tiny village, all of them." So there is that sense of skepticism that Lijo is introducing from the very first scene itself. And I think I so when we were talking about this over email, I mentioned in my mail that it sort of reminded me of this story arc from Unforgiven, Eastwood's one of his last great westerns, I think in the mid-90s sometime. There was a character in Unforgiven, which is sort of shown to be a precursor of a true crime writer who keeps following around these gunfighters. And as we learn through the course of the film, most of his articles and newspaper stuff are largely falsified or exaggerated or some combination of both. And it's finally East when he's interrogating Eastwood's character, William Money. And he says, "Oh, how do you get an instinct for who to shoot first? There are 10 people here." And Money gives some kind of lackadaisical answer like, "Yeah, I've just been lucky when it comes to killing." Just to sort of puncture the delusions of grandeur that bard characters like these typically tend to have. So I also wanted a little bit more of that. But having said that, I think Lijo kind of does that towards the end when so in Hindi we call this a takia kalam. I believe in English it's called a leitmotif, a sort of repetitive dialogue that one character keeps saying again and again. And with Mohanlal's character in this film, it's everything that you have not seen is a lie. Only believe your eyes. This is what he says, right?
Yeah, this is what he
Karna the
says,
gyotam.
and yeah.
So, but at the end, when so this is a spoiler. But at the end, when we get to know the backstory of Waliban and we know that Waliban's final foe is going to be his own long estranged father, his long estranged father actually flips the line around towards the end. He says that everything that you've seen is a lie and everything unseen is the truth. Okay, so he sort of flips that also because, again, going back to the medieval stories theme, a lot of medieval stories tend to end on this sort of circularity in the narrative where things that we have taken for granted sort of are flipped on their head.
Yeah. Also, sorry, you were asking about references. A weird one that came into my head was, for some reason, and this is probably not intended at all, but some of those frames were very Amit Datta. I especially in the fort.
I did not expect that. Okay.
Those are such Amit Datta frames. It's crazy.
The second fight, Mongodu fight sequence in which Mohanlal stands on his staff, that is almost identical to several shots from the Once Upon a Time in China films, where Jet Li does very similar things.
Actually, the other, again, maybe not intended, but very much of the genre fight sequences from the Heroic Trio, like, you know, just flying and there's nothing exactly martial arts about it, but it's also like a fantastical
the Jet Li film Hero also had Donnie Yen in it, and the scenes involving the two of them were all peak wire fu. Right.
And I think the other aspect to this is how Mohanlal's own physicality is used. I thought that was quite brilliantly done. Like, I mean, of course, he's very much aware that what people are expecting a larger than life character and to fight like this. But marrying that with the kind of narrative that he's going for, or anti-narrative that he's going for, and then put them in images instead of actual fight scenes. Like in the first fight scene, it's almost like he's almost too tired to even fight. Like, he's just sitting and then it's just over in a second. It's not like some long drawn fight. Nothing is a long drawn fight. In fact, there's nothing that where he's like super struggling, except for the Portuguese part where he's pretty much he cannot do anything, and nothing is a long drawn fight. Nothing feels like a battle. Only in the end, I think, when the whole emotional investment and the whole the other angle comes in, that we actually see that there is an actual conflict itself in the film. But I thought otherwise, it's pretty much a showcase for a hero figure that he's going to just break in the third act completely.
I mean, in the very first scene where he's resting, it's a drunken master kind of a thing, right? Because he downs a huge pot of liquor just before the fight. I mean, that's not water; it's like milky stuff. So it's definitely some kind of rice liquor or something like that. So it's a drunken master thing. So he's sitting and everything, but all the other scenes, like for example, the Mongodu fight and the fight with the British Portuguese. His conquistadors, etc. It is at so many points I was reminded of Sammo Hung fights, because the physicality is so similar, the stature, etc., is so similar. And Sammo Hung was the chap who also choreographed a lot of peak Jackie Chan movies in the 80s. And one notable aspect of his choreography, and he was a pioneer in this, was he was the first person who utilized both the comic aspect and the fighting mechanism aspect of pitting two opponents of wildly different sizes. Okay, he figured out very early on that this is a great, very entertaining way of shooting fight scenes. So to pit opponents of wildly differing sizes. And I think you kind of see this in the way Lijo has used Mohanlal's physicality in the fight scenes here.
I think it's also just a great exercise in seeing that, A, how much work goes into making some of our older, out-of-shape stars into action, like bona fide action stars in India. It must be so tough. You got to do so much more work as a director and an action choreographer and a
assistant
and an editor to kind of do it. But you can see all the invention that goes into it in this film. Just the use of the slow-mo, the way Mohanlal's photographed, like It's like even when there's the size mismatch, like the first fight which he has against the village wrestler, you get the sense that he's going to be fine because he's very grounded. So the other guys always sort of seems to be like in motion and kind of not in a very stable way, whereas Mohanlal's always like his posture is great and also simple things like that. Lijo sort of manages to make into much more than they are, and he remains very still. So the other person, always his opponent's always in motion, and Mohanlal's nearly always still. He's just blocking things. He's putting his hand up. He's sort of making these small movements, and so you have to do that. I mean, that's you could say the same of Kamala Hassan in Vikram also. When you see his fighting style, it's always like very efficient, small, choppy movements. It's a lot of work to kind of get these old guys to work as action stars in India, but yeah, they all manage it in very different ways. And I mean, some of the sequences in this are insane.
You use the word grounded right now, right?
Yeah,
You seem
yeah.
to be grounded. Yeah. This reminds me, there are so many moments in the film where it is strongly implied that Waliban is somehow, he has some mystical hold over the forces of nature, or he's somehow connected to nature much more than the average person. One of the first things that we see Waliban doing on screen is this. He looks up at the sky and does this. And because of the way the camera is placed, we actually see the sun through his fingers. Okay, it's a genius shot. And again, the ground thing that you mentioned, then in a different shot, we see the moon through Waliban's eyes like this. So there are a number of moments where we see the forces of nature sort of conspiring with Waliban almost. Towards the end also, if you notice, the very last scene in the film is him leaping off his father leaping off a snowy cliff, and the two characters are only looking at each other through the prism of the mountains there.
What did you think of Prashant Pillai out here? I think his work is always very interesting with Lijo.
Yeah, his work's always interesting, and I more than the action sequences, some of those the night shots and the flute. What he does with the flute in some of those scenes is just brilliant. Like I think so, as good as the imagery is, I think more those sequences were really lifted by his score. And even that busy horse festival, like that whole sound design in that part is, I mean, everything in that sequence, that's just it's just out of the world. And I even before going there, something that I want to ask you was like when after the Mangudu fight sequence, there's a talk of that liberating the slaves, and it suddenly we think that that's what the movie is going, and the rest of the movie is going to be about that. But then that gets over so quickly, and then we move completely to something else, and we keep moving like this all the time. So how did that work for you as you were watching? Like when one and there is no single strand of story to even follow. Like at one point I thought, okay, yeah, the slave liberation is probably where it's going, and that's going to be the whole rest of the film. But that gets over pretty much in the next 15 minutes, as chaotic as those 15 minutes are. But then we keep moving from one to another. How did that work for you as you were watching?
I totally thought that they were going to do a bit of narrative trickery and sort of maybe like just address the storytelling itself, like as a thing. Like I thought they were going to maybe reveal that at least some of what we had watched was not true, or someone would call it into question. And because it just seemed, again, as you pointed out, like it ends and that's it. Like there's nothing after that. It's like it should be like the end of the whole film in a way. In a more conventional film, that would be the climax after the fort.
Yeah.
And after the liberation of the locals, and it's just like nothing. They just move on, like straight on. They just move as if he won like a single fight against like some village guy, and they move on. And I was like, this is so weird. And it's I don't know. It just I. Maybe it just sees it like all these vignettes that are put together about this guy, and the thing that's holding it together is his own story, which is revealed at the end, which becomes a bit of a problem when it's, one film and we never get to see the second.
So to the extent that we call it a misdirect, whenever screenwriters do this, the misdirect worked on me because I was fairly convinced that okay, the second half is going to be Lijo's RRR, and it's going to be a fun ride and everything. But it wasn't, obviously.
Maybe,
And
thankfully.
okay, so it wasn't that, and when the fourth sequence concluded and it was clear that there's still close to 40 to 50 minutes left in the film, I was very intrigued. Okay, like, okay, this is going to be interesting and possibly, something like a non sequitur type of an ending. It wasn't even that. And then towards the end of the film, I realized that this is sort of following a technique or a structure that, sort of again harkens back to medieval, like, for example, Nasruddin Hoxha or Birbal or Tenali Raman, right? We are never told their stories from a linear case. Here, so and so were born here, then they see their education there. No, we are only ever told about their lives and their exploits in the format of these vignettes from other people. It's literally hearsay. Everything we know about them is hearsay, inherently so. Okay, and that is the sort of template that I think Lijo was going for here. That struck me from the, like, from the writerly point of view. That's how I saw it. From the film point of view, my conspiracy theory about this is increasingly more and more films are going to look like this because of a simple reason that streamers are encouraging filmmakers to make their films in discrete sections so that people can use the seek button more efficiently. This is true.
Yeah, it's one highlight after another.
No, highlight after another. And also when people are thinking of rewatching something, they just know, okay, this follows this, follows this, follows that. And then they can just watch their favorite bits. Kashyap, in an interview about RRR, in an interview in which he spoke about RRR, among other things, Kashyap actually listed this as one of the strengths of RRR. Like, this is how 21st century films are now going to be made.
Or at least the theatrical films are going to make it. You don't know. Yeah.
I mean, that this has been a way of making action films for a long time, in the sense that, they have,
Go
especially
from
when
one
it's
high
a big
point to another.
start,
Yeah.
they know that, okay, we're gonna have, the showdown out here. There's gonna be a fight at the mall. There's gonna be like a big car chase. There's things, and then they
Cut for
have
the
to
chase.
figure out,
Yeah.
what goes on in between. So they have been doing that to an extent. It is a bit it's strange to see Lijo's take on it, because again, it's just, I don't know if you could say it's anti-narrative, but it's at least upending most of like the narrative structures that we have seen in recent film. Aditya, you had mentioned Shakespeare when you were talking about the film. Sorry, both
Yeah.
Adityas are nodding, but yeah, so maybe both Adityas can talk about that also. Was it mostly like, father wanting to kill son, mama turning out to be like evil, or not evil, but misunderstandings happening that way, that kind of
Sure, that
Shakespeare, or?
the father and son bit was right towards the end, but the Shakespeare bit had struck
Yeah.
me in the first half itself. And I think that Shakespeare vibe for me was strongest when we saw a song about Waliban playing around the halfway mark, the street theater bit. okay, where he meets the courtesan for the first time,
या
and
रंगरानी
she is
क्या.
singing a song about Malikote Valiban, and then the real Valiban comes and kicks off Danish Syed off the stage. That in that
या
scene, the Shakespeare vibe is strongest because we are actually learning about the story from another story which is nested within. So this is a very Shakespeare device. It's in a number of plays, including Hamlet. This sort of device is used to as both to progress the story along and also to teach the audience how to read the story in the first place.
Yeah,
The
for
mouse
me,
trap and mousetrap.
for me it was more about like the first half. I really saw it as Arabian Nights frame narrative. Like you go from one story to another, you go from one place to another. Like even after the first Rustler fight, like that is basically the introduction. You completely go to this Matangi and played by Suchitra Nair. Sequence like there is suddenly a love story. There's someone this sort of a queen like figure with Valiban, and you have that, and then you move on to something else. So the first half moved like that, but when the horse festival happens, and then when you have this Rangrani's love story and Tenamma, which completely becomes something like it becomes sort of Macbeth or sort of poisoning someone's mind against someone who's like a Valiban's own half brother. Like you have that kind of arc happening. I thought, okay, this suddenly moved into Shakespeare territory, and we didn't even realize. And he accomplished this so well. This transition happened so well, and it didn't even feel out of place in this film because by now we've submitted ourselves to the film.
I just wanted to mention a little thing about the little play that happens where they're performing and then Danish Syed turns up on stage. I just wonder that when Danish Syed goes up on stage and the little fake Bharatanatyam that he does is so good. And it's such a little good bit of comedy, and it's a good indication of that this is not just like a popular comedian being asked to come and like just try and be eccentric on camera and all. It's actually like it is a performance that has nuances and stuff. He's working in a broad register, but there are a lot of interesting things that he does. Just that 1 minute when he goes up and dances with her and threatens her, that's fantastic.
If either of you seen The Witcher, Henry Cavill's show, The Witcher,
I haven't actually,
right? No, you have. So, if you see the structure of The Witcher's the first season, that is, we never find out about The Witcher from a character perspective POV, right? We are always finding out things about The Witcher from other people, just like it is with Malaikottai Valiban. And just like with Valiban, there is a bard who keeps following around the Witcher, and his character is basically used to make points about exaggeration and artistic license and all of those things, and which is much the same debate that we were having right now about how much of this is meant to be taken at face value and how much of this is the unreliable narrator effect going on. So there are a couple of parallels with the Witcher which I found very interesting here in that context. Also, just the very idea of a wandering warrior of indeterminate loyalties. This is there in most ancient cultures, right? The samurai, the ronin,
Of course, yeah.
is a masterless samurai, right? And that's what Valiban is to a large extent.
And there is also Lijo's fixation with like biblical imagery and the stories is pretty much evident here. Like this is something that I did not notice, but when someone pointed out to me, it was pretty obvious that it's the whole the prison sequence, which has him tied up and then pulling the two pillars, is basically Samson's story. And
Very
it's
Samson,
yeah, even the narrative is almost structured like Samson. And Lijo, right from Amen to Imayo, like uses biblical stories and images all the time. So that was pretty much that's at least one of the few expected things from Lijo that we saw in this
Sure.
film.
I wanted to ask both of you this. Have we figured out why the Raja and Rani were speaking Portuguese?
No, it's, I mean, I thought it's okay.
Is there
it's Kerala? It's Kerala.
Even a crazy
so
reason. Even a crazy reason. But is there any reason at all why?
I don't know if it's supposed to be like our universe or our world, but because it's supposed to also be supposed to be Kerala, okay, maybe there's some Portuguese speaking. I don't know. Like it's just very out
also,
of the blue. Yeah.
You have to understand they're speaking Portuguese only to one person, which is their interpreter. Right, so that the interpreter can then speak Malayalam to the people at large. Okay, so the only conclusion I can make is the Macaulays somehow could not find an interpreter who could speak English, but they found one who could somehow speak Portuguese and Malayalam.
I just assumed that Lijo was doing it because
just to
he
underline
thought it
the
would be
character's
cool.
Foreignness.
And he liked the sound of them saying soldados,
soldados.
A lot.
Yeah.
And therefore he had them do that. They're so cool though, those two villains. Like
yeah,
one, two of the
also
most
because
fun
those
villains
are,
that we have had in a while.
They knew what kind of film they were in.
for sure. Like, and to the extent that they give the, even before the, you know, the Jab Tak Hai Jaan moment, like the Jab Tak Hai Jaan or Shole wala moment where they're dancing on this thing and the quasi Mehbooba Mehbooba song, they give the guy, the Raja, R.D. Burman like thing. He just does like an R.D. Burman like yell to the crowd even before that. So he gives like the Shole moment starts from there itself for no reason. A lot of fun.
Also, I love how the two of them, you know, turn up to fight Mohanlal in what I can only describe as light BDSM wear.
Oh man, yeah, you're right. I mean, I think you were very correct with the Mortal Kombat reference also for that fight, which it really does have that vibe. I didn't think of it until now, but yeah, that fight. And it's interesting that that's the worst, I think, of the action sequences until they do the upside down conjoined sort of centipede attack thing on him. You know, because until then, it's the closest thing to a kind of conventional modern action scene. And it doesn't look right with Mohanlal. But as soon as they go crazy and do weird stuff, then it settles down and then it's fine. So I think it's good that Lijo kind of indulged his wildest fantasies of action cinema with this, because I think it works well with someone like Mohanlal.
Yeah, what do you make of Lijo's I don't know if there's any other Indian filmmaker working currently who kind of jumps from one genre to another like this at this level just plays with everything at his disposal, and to follow up something like Nanpagal with this is just absolutely crazy, and he also works very quickly. Like the films just get over so quickly. I mean, Malayalam Kerala works very quickly with films. They just make films in a couple of months, but Lijo is special in his own way.
Yeah, I think Uday said something very similar about genre just as we were leaving the hall. So I think Uday will feel this one.
I mean, it's amazing to me. I think on most days, I think he's probably my favorite director in India. Just in terms of, like, I really don't know what I'm getting through him. And he's one of the few who knows how to cut trailers really well. So you don't really get a lot through his trailers also. And so what you get in the hall is a great surprise. All his stuff looks great on the big screen. Who could even tell that, like, the director of Nanpakal and this film and say Ima Yao are the same one.
Yeah.
It's mind-boggling. It's truly something extraordinary to see. And I like that he's like a restless guy and he can't seem to, settle on one kind of film which he wants to make. Even though there are a lot of themes, motifs, and all that follow him through all his films, but they all look wildly different and they're just, I mean, he takes so many chances. It's a lot of fun.
Yeah, I think one theme which Lijo does especially well in all of his films across genre, and I realize that he has covered a lot of genres by now, is I think he's definitely, I wouldn't say fixated, but he has a keen understanding of and therefore a keen interest in the many shades of human guilt. I think guilt and shame are two things that are very, very central to his like sort of vision and diagnosis of the world. And yeah, he does that so well here as well. I mean, shame and guilt are the twin drivers of so many things happening in Waliban. Like even Waliban's eventual backstory when it is revealed. It's yeah, basically Waliban's maven was humiliated so thoroughly by his father because his father could just have defeated him in combat and moved on. Like Waliban moves on very quickly from everywhere. But no, he chose to stay and then also birth a child with that man's wife, and also do it within earshot. Okay, and also then make that man wash their clothes, etc. So it's really,
And I
it's
mean
like,
the detailing in the story, like
it's grisly.
I had
It's
someone message saying, like someone who hated the film saying, what is this? Why are they talking like this? I'm like, but if at that point you didn't think that this film is gonna throw up details like that, then what can we say?
Yeah, it's like it's so when we are hearing things like, as I could listen to the sounds of their love making, and
Yeah,
then
and
an
I had to
hour
wash their
later,
semen stained
yeah,
clothes.
as washing their semen stained clothes, etc. So these things are like, these are basically,
I forgot
the this
that
genre's equivalent of, Kill Bill showing us very lovingly a head rolling across the floor.
Yeah.
Okay. So it's a bit like that, and I think Clijo is very much like, whenever he decides to show us guilt or shame, there is no doubt as to what is, there are no half measures. He
Yeah.
throws the kitchen sink at you, and even in the first the conclusion of the first wrestling battle, right? The village chieftain or headman, whoever, he says ki, okay, from now on, this man's house, his animals and his woman are all Walibans. So that aspect is very much emphasized from the beginning itself. Like, if pride and shame hadn't been the drivers of the action, then the whole second half wouldn't have happened, because it's basically jealousy
Yeah.
that ruins everything, right?
Let me ask you, do you think that, say, this film was a hit and it could have been in two parts? Do you think this film should have been in two parts? Do you think he should have done it in one? Assuming that we kind of say wherever the narrative was going, that there's a clash between him and his birth father, and that story is taken forward, do you think he should try to kind of wrap it up in one go?
Yeah, I mean I don't know like I've lost track of what informs this whole behavior of sequels and how they structure it and when this idea of sequels came. Like it could have been even an afterthought that came much later. Maybe he did have a I really cannot imagine what kind of closure he could have had for this film. But at the same time, it doesn't feel like sequel is the answer either. And it feels very unlikely to give in to something that is, that's like a staple now of big productions. Lijo, someone who completely works outside of all those conventions from any industry for that matter. So it feels very unlike him, and which is also why I think we can sometimes like we were talking about at this beginning that we can maybe confidently say that the second film might never come. So with anyone else, I wouldn't have said that. Like with someone like, the Prashant Neel or someone else, so yeah, definitely they're going to make a second film. But with this one, I don't know if another one is coming. Yeah.
I think Lijo is going to make a second part just as a sort of fuck you.
Yeah,
I that's
that might,
my yeah, I would really like that to be true.
he needs money,
That's my
and the problem is that I hope it doesn't come from a streamer because I mean, the film looks fine on the small screen, but man, seeing
yeah,
it
it's a different,
in
yeah.
a theater was
Definitely a large
just
screen, sir.
was
Definitely.
nuts. I mean, that was just something else.
Yeah,
I do
just,
think that, there is this commercial imperative towards sequels, sure. But when you come down to it, okay, what kind of character is best suited for sequels? I think the answer is a character very much like Voldemort, which is to say a static character in which growth is not an option, not ever. Okay. He towards the end he even says that what could be more sobering than the realization that a warrior doesn't really belong anywhere with anyone. Okay, so in a way you have sort of custom designed a character that's made to last forever. You can have him do endless adventures because he never belongs anywhere. He doesn't make emotional bonds. His very code of behavior is against that sort of thing.
And also someone like with there's something very different about this film going for the sequel. Like when they have films that are planned in such a way that it's there are going to be films following this one. They are marketed like crazy. Their trailers are cut differently. They're promotions are made differently. Nothing of that sort happened with this film. Like if you for all the other films, they make sure that even if they're probably flops, but actually the kind of conversation that they have, like you have they tend to be treated with kid gloves. Like, yeah, okay, it turned out to be bad, but then it's a star film and it did enough. It made its money back. But no, they of course they had the sequel coming and they will make the sequel because they do have enough money and they because the star will guarantee that amount of money. But this one, there was no. I didn't see any kind of effort. I mean, I didn't see any kind of effort in the sense that it's very much a Malayalam film. That's how Malayalam films are released. You don't like see crazy promotions for anything, no matter it's Mammootty or Mohanlal. But for a film that they probably had a sequel in mind, it was not promoted with that in mind at all. Like it was not like promoted in a way that, oh, people shouldn't forget this because we are going to be making a sequel after this. So that didn't happen with this film. So which is why it's very it's not it's very unlike other films that come with the sequel baggage.
Yeah, and I
Any
think the playfulness just threw everyone off because we've gotten so used to like these super serious kind of like really flattering sort of action films which make so much of their hero, and this one kind of was, but it was also very tongue in cheek. Everything was a little bit disbalanced, and I don't know, maybe audiences just don't have the have a kind of stomach for that
Yeah.
nowadays. Even the hall people were kind of confused when we were watching it that day. It was a little weird to see, and compare that to another film that we'd seen a little while back in the theater in which was
Salar.
Salaar, and people were going absolutely nuts for that. And
Yeah, I was surprised people weren't tearing out seats in Salar because it was a frenzy.
it was like animalistic sounds were coming from the people around us when Prabhas was
Well,
doing
and
his thing.
very
And
interestingly, I heard virtually the same war cry when Prabhas appears on the screen in Salaar for the first time. Some enterprising soul behind us shouted "Sher Aaya," okay, as a kind of war cry. "Sher Aaya" means the lion is here. Okay, and the same war cry, Sher Aaya, I heard on January 23rd when I was covering the Ram Janmabhoomi telecast, and Modi came, पीछे से किसी ने चिल्लाया शेर आया. तो आदित्य, दिस इज एक्चुअली अ पॉइंट इन योर फेवर व्हेन यू रोट दैट आर्टिकल अबाउट केजीएफ एंड कंपेयर्ड रॉकीज कैरेक्टर विद मोदी एंड एवरीथिंग. दिस इज लाइक अ रियल लाइफ डेमोन्स्ट्रेशन ऑफ दैट.
Yeah, we were just talking about before you joined about 370 and how apparently it's a big hit and everything. So yeah, everything fits. Yeah, Sala's supposed to have like it's a hit, but apparently like it's supposed to have underperformed. They expected it to do like KGF, but yeah, and that of course that sequel is definitely coming. But yeah, I think I'm not a topic that I had in mind. Anything else we missed? I'm not
I think we mentioned
necessarily.
Wodorowski right in the beginning, and I think that is like a big thing, though we haven't talked about it much, though I think that vibe is
Not
there
just that
in.
vibe, but also the fact that Jodorowsky is a largely vibes-based filmmaker. There isn't really a
Yeah,
lot of. He's only
the surrealism is definitely there.
vibes. He's only. And that's kind of what Lijo was going for in large parts here.
I think it's very much. I think a lot of the references that we brought up, some of them may be like, stuff that we are projecting, but Jodorowsky, I am very
Very sure,
confident
yeah.
that that was rattling around somewhere in
The
his
very
head.
first 10 minutes itself signals that quite clear. The way he is shooting the sandy landscapes is right out of El Topo or his Dune.
Yeah, that's very much there, yeah. And it is a, like yeah, it's just go with it film. Like you at some point you have to
Also,
like leave.
Jodorowsky was big, like, he's, I'm trying to think of a polite way to say crazy, but yeah. So he had a lot of psychosexual things that he used to project in his films, right? The number of amputations, for example, in his cinema is like off the charts. Limb amputation scenes, I don't know if any other filmmaker who has done as many. In Fando, there is this scene where, a boy who has witnessed a rape as a child then amputates somebody else's hands. Okay. And there is, you don't have to be Freud to understand what's going on there. Okay. And I think that a very small part of that is there in the way Waliban's romantic misadventures are shown here.
Okay, that was our discussion on Joe's Malakottai Valiban. I guess at least three of us will definitely be there on first day of if the sequel does come up, but yeah, we don't know if it happens.
Definitely.
Yeah. But thanks for listening. Thanks Uday and Aditya joining. Great to have you. Good to have you
Was
there again.
lovely, lovely talking to you, Aditya,
Thanks for
and
having
then.
us.
Yeah, and hopefully Malayalam, like I said, this yeah off to a great start. We'll probably do more episodes of Malayalam cinema. Thank you guys. We'll be back with another episode soon. Bye.
Hey folks, this is Deepak, aka Complicatrua on Twitter, and I wanted to personally thank you for listening to our latest episode. If you liked what you heard, please subscribe to The Other Banana on Apple, Google, Spotify, Amazon, or any of the other platforms where you listen to podcasts. Please do leave us a review and a rating, as it helps us drive visibility for our work. You can also view the team's writing or provide us feedback on our content at tobpod.com. We look forward to hearing from our listeners soon. Thank you.